right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ Podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit Podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit Podcast. We have got a great guest lined up for you guys. They are in studio, which is always a good time. And it seems like there's like some great synergy in the room. Marcus, I think you should do an introduction because I feel like this is someone you know very well.
I do. I will do the introduction on this one. I'm so glad you're here. And for the people who know my story and are familiar with what happened on the mountain, they're familiar with the part getting me off the mountain. That's a whole story in its entirety. And actually, this is the guy who did it. This is the man who pulled me off the mountain. Actually, got his ass in there to get me off the mountain. I get more comments on the Joe Rogan podcast that I did talking about you, that whole story. Which is the best story? Yours is. Getting me out of there was crazy.
Jeff
Spanky. No. Peterson. No, that's like Jeff Peterson. Yeah. We were laughing about this the other day. I was like, man, I know guys my whole life. I never knew their name, just a call sign.
Jeff Spanky.
I knew your name. I didn't know your call sign for the longest time. When I got back, they wouldn't tell me that stuff. They kept me away from you guys for a while or vice versa for whatever reason. But, we're all back at work. Mostly, everybody went back to their grind.
So it was Spanky, it was you and Skinny, right?
Skinny was in the other aircraft. We were both aircraft commanders. Right. So it was me and Gonzo, Dave Gonzalez.
Okay, yes.
Was the two up front. And then I had Mike Cusick, two-tour Vietnam flight engineer.
Oh, my gosh.
So he had seen, he was a Huey gunner back in Vietnam.
Are you kidding me?
No. So he was.
How did you get that, Jim? I didn't know
he was cool in the gang. And then I had a college student. Ben Peterson was the left gunner, and he was pinging.
Your
and then I had two
relation or no
PJs, no different. No. Yeah, two PJs. One was a doctor at the time, and then Checky. Yeah.
All right, before we get into the good stuff.
Okay. Sorry.
So wait a minute. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I got to start with the same about the Patreon.
Oh
question.
Yeah.
I got to do it. All right. What Guinness World Record do you think you could break this afternoon? I've got a few good ones here that I looked up today. Most t-shirts put on in 1 minute. Current record is 31.
Dumb.
Most Jell-O eaten with chopsticks in 1 minute, 3.2 ounces.
No.
Most sticky notes on the face in 1 minute. Current record is 58. Fastest time to place 24 cans in a fridge, 9.76 seconds. I think this one I could beat this afternoon. It is crackers. Most saltine crackers eaten in 1 minute. Current record is only 10.
Oh, I could do that.
I'm pretty sure.
No, it's harder than
they dry your mouth out, right?
Yeah, that's like the milk and the egg thing.
What would your strategy be? I'm thinking 3 per 15 seconds to get 12, which would beat the record.
Or should you throw all of them in there at once to use all the saliva? So one could dry it all up.
The whole thing, the whole little package, crumble it up into crumbs and just shake.
I'm sure that's been tried. I really don't have an answer for that one.
I could beat the cracker one.
All right, we should do this.
I also really like Jell-O, so I think I could do that one as well.
With chopsticks? That's the hard part.
Well, I'm pretty good with chopsticks.
I'm not.
No.
But it doesn't seem like a lot of Jell-O. I feel like I could just poke it.
How many Guinness Book records are there?
Oh, that's a great question. Let's find out.
Couldn't you just take the chopsticks and like rub the rim of the bowl or vessel that it's in and then just pop it in your mouth?
Stab it? I think so.
All right.
That's what I would do.
You got anything for me?
I feel like we should challenge ourselves every year to at least get
in. Trying to break one.
Yeah. To get in the book.
I would just like to see Melanie try it because she's pretty confident that she can.
Dropping a challenge is one thing. If you accept it, that's completely different.
I will accept the Jell-O and cracker challenge.
Oh, she's backpedaling.
I had my kids do the cinnamon thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was the meanest thing Marcus has done. He told the kids that they would get an iPhone, which they really, really want. If they could swallow an entire...
They wouldn't leave me alone about a damn iPhone.
...spoonful of cinnamon. So
they're not getting one.
They did it and choked and choked.
It was awesome.
They vomited.
I can't physically hurt my kids or beat them or abuse them anymore. You know, rules.
They vomited.
But I can come up... That's awesome. Not true.
They did.
That is
and
not
then Addie
true.
Got a rash from it because it went all down. The cinnamon went down her
so
shirt.
So they still hounding you for phones?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We were pretty strict with phones.
I'm
real
strict.
Boys.
I'm on the straight. Like, I laid down some guides. You got to make straight A's. I mean, I need.
We were worse than that. We made our boys. They didn't have a smartphone until they were out of high school.
Yeah, that's what I plan. That's my plan. Until they're smart enough to have one.
I heard.
I'll put a low jack on you if you want, man. But you ain't getting no damn smartphone. Because that means that whatever age I give that to you, that's me telling you that the world can take care of you.
Yeah, it's spooky these days.
The cool part about being born in the 1900s is we didn't have all that tech, so we had to figure it out. And when I get done teaching my kids how to figure stuff out, then they can have it.
There you go.
I'm as nice as I can be about it. I just seen too many. I hear the guys who invent that crap tell me not to give it to them.
Okay, so Hunter is in the studio today.
He's different. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's and Hunter, how old were you when you got your first cell phone?
Cell phone, I think I was in third grade, but I didn't have an iPhone until.
Well, until they came out.
Which was what age, son?
It was, I mean, I think it was high school, right?
A little no. after.
No.
College. An iPhone?
He got an iPhone in eighth grade.
Is that true?
Maybe not.
It could have been.
Whatever, man. Special circumstances. I came in as a whirlwind. Whatever.
Special circumstances.
By the way, there's over 53,000 current records in the database.
Is that what it is?
53,000. I looked it up. Yeah.
Can we create our own record?
Yeah, how's that work?
I think so.
So I was looking at what it takes to get a record, and there's some stipulations, and basically you have to fill out an application, but
it's always a damn application.
There's an application, and then you have to follow their guidelines to a T, or it will not count.
Do you submit a video, or do they send somebody out?
Either or. To get somebody to come out, it's got to be a pretty big record and a pretty big deal.
I don't know. Well, I understand that.
I think we could do like how many books you could autograph in a certain amount of time.
Oh, Marcus is for sure.
I'm sure there's got to be a record for that.
The record. Fast. Yeah, he is so quick. People will say, oh, I've scheduled an hour for Marcus to sign 50 books. I'm like, that might take him 2 minutes.
Yeah.
2 full minutes.
He you know, we do something, signed. We overdo it. Like, you learn how to do it really well. Like, you know, same thing. It's called OCD out in the civilian world. It's called being squared away when you're in the military.
Squared
well,
away.
But you also have like a scribble signature, so
it's because someone stole my identity, so I had to change it. And, you know,
scribble is where you landed.
I call it my glyph. All right, you can call it whatever glyph. You want. That's how you know it's me.
It's all good. It's all good. You know, Patreon. Check it out. Patreon.com/TeamNeverQuit. That way, you can ask fun questions. You can get exclusive access to behind the scenes content. Get some bonus swag, and that's about it. Marcus, it's all you, brother.
Okay, let's get into this. We can talk about the operation. We're going to talk about that. Before we do that, let's just get into the backstory a little bit, where you come from, where how this started, how'd you wind up in the military? Because how we wound up together is a great story.
Yeah, I wasn't from a military family at all.
At all.
At all. My grandparents were too old, young for World War I, too old for World War II. My dad, mom
same thing.
Same thing. They just missed everything except my dad's youngest brother went to Vietnam, lasted 3 months. So that was my intro to military. You join and you die, you know. So
is that how it was preached?
Well, he lost his uncle in Vietnam.
Yeah, just lost
my uncle. I understand. But I was just curious, is that how they said it though?
We just really didn't talk about it. I grew up in a small town, northern Utah, Logan. Hill Air Force Base was an hour away, but wasn't a big military presence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was patriotic. I loved my country. I loved the flag. I did all those things, but I didn't really want to join because I thought the military was just getting yelled at and told what to do.
So where'd you learn your
like
patriotism?
That. My parents, probably.
And in school, they still do the pledge?
Oh, yeah, everything.
Because I was the same way. Like, it wasn't pushed on us. Even we have a military family, but I didn't.
But you were real proud of your country and everything, yeah.
We always had that.
And I always wanted to fly, so that was part of it.
Where'd that come from? What'd you see?
I don't know. It was dreams. I don't know. I just wanted to fly. I just thought that'd be
Why
cool.
Why rotary?
No, I didn't even know they really existed. That's another story. We'll get to that.
All right, check.
So I just wanted to fly and grew up in northern Utah. I did a 2-year mission for my church, LDS mission in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And one of my companions there were out knocking doors, white shirt with a black name tag. His brother was an Air Force pilot. And I remember thinking, that would be cool. So that was the first I'd thought of even whatever. Done a year prior to going on my mission, I came home. My parents had moved from Logan down to Tempe, Arizona. He was at Arizona State University.
Great school.
Yeah. So I thought, oh, I'll go give it a shot. Fell in love with ASU. Miss Penny MacArthur was from Tempe, Arizona. Yeah. Blind date. Rest is history.
Hey, those get you.
Yeah.
That's what happened here.
Yeah. I tell you what.
What's happening still to get right? Those are good ones.
Yeah. So anyways, I was in 2-year ROTC with the pilot slot and went in. 10 days before commissioning, they took my pilot slot away. And because the Bush drawdown, recession, I was like, come on, I thought it was a guarantee. And so I went in as a maintenance officer, hoping I'd get a pilot slot back. So
oh,
I was
wow, that's not, explain that. That doesn't, that's not a thing.
That wasn't a good thing. But it happened to a lot of guys. So I was just going to get out, but we were newly married, recession.
What year was this?
91.
Okay.
So then I went in, and I got the mighty B-1B up in Abilene. So that was our first duty assignment. Dyess Air Force Base, Abilene, Texas. Got a dog there. And about 2.5 years later, Penny was pregnant, and my number came up, and we were going to Del Rio, Texas.
Oh, gosh.
So we were on the Rio Grande, and I flew the jets there. But while I was at Abilene, good friend of mine, I was out visiting him and saw you on the steps of the Capitol, and I was like, now that's probably his freaking brother. Got to meet Morgan for the first time.
Yeah.
But he's a congressman now, but he was a bone driver, a B-1 driver out of Abilene, and he was prior Air Force helicopters, and he got me so jazzed on helos. His name's Chris Stewart, and now he's a congressman.
Yeah.
So I went to pilot training.
Small world, right?
25 of us. I was number 8, and there was one fighter slot. I didn't want to fly heavy, so I went helicopters, and the rest is history.
And I helicopters more of a pain in the ass to learn.
I know. I didn't know that at the time. My parents were like, are you sure? Because helicopters crash. Mm-hmm. They're dangerous.
They all crash.
You know, this
you don't fly them right.
A lot of moving parts. So, yeah, that's how I got into helicopters and chose my first career path was combat rescue on the 60.
What was the first time you ever went on one? Was it just in flight school? Did you ever go out and get on one?
That
was hard to do back in those days. Who had a helicopter, yeah, right? You just didn't
but
have
in them. Del Rio, we were able to scam a ride on a Eurocopter, one of those green Border Patrol helicopters.
Oh, yeah, they're great. Border Patrol, man.
Jumped in, and me and my, and I just remember, you know, I mean, because you hit your skid, it's a pivot point, and you can crash real easy. He just was sitting there letting us just kind of bounce into the grass, and he was pretty, but it was fun, and I thought, I even remember when we went to Fort
Sound
Rucker,
Alabama.
Sounded
like it was so cool that he might have been hoping you would die.
Yeah.
Crash that thing so you're getting
a new one or something. I remember when I was at pilot training, had because the Air Force goes to the Army because they're the experts in Alabama, Fort Rucker, Alabama.
Is that true? You said that out loud.
Yeah, I know.
You're going to keep that in there?
I know, whatever. But right. They are. They're the experts of the or they do a ton of it. We don't have
them. Too late. It's already out. Let's,
yeah, exactly. But I came home at night, had a new, you know, 10-month-old kid, and I'm in tears almost, telling Penny, there is no way I'm ever going to be able to do this. Because I had mastered the planes, but there was no way I was going to learn how to hover and do all that stuff. And I thought I'd screwed up, but you figured
more of
it out.
Fear or just like you did, it's because you'd never done it before.
Because I just was super frustrated because it wasn't the first few flights weren't going that well, and I was just like this. And it is super hard. I equate it to like once you learn how to ride a bike. I mean, it's pretty easy, but this is like you master riding a bike, and now you're on one of those 10-foot-tall unicycles, and plus you're probably trying to juggle at the same time. It's not natural.
Yeah, with a sail on your back?
Yeah, it's not natural, but it's the best flying out there because you can land in ranchers' fields, which I've done and had troubles, and you're fine.
Because some of those, I mean, and this is what a lot of people don't know, is how much y'all fly. Like y'all's department and what you were assigned to, man, the flying the auto, because some of the guys, y'all get so good at flying them things, man, you could park it like you park a car.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
We try to push ourselves, and our mission is to go in and get a fighter pilot that's ejected deep into enemy territory. We go in, evade, find them, locate them, authenticate them, get them out. That's our mission. But that never happens.
Is that because Scott in O'Grady, Vietnam that happened so much?
It was a big thing in Vietnam, and mm-hmm. we've built from that. But since Vietnam, even in Iraq,
oh really?
It was a 3-day war kind of thing, you know. And guys, yeah, they got rolled up some on the first Desert Storm and stuff like that. But that's our thing, is to go in low, fast, get them, get out, and hopefully not get shot down. Mm. Helicopters were the highest loss rate in Vietnam. They were shot down all the time.
That's when they stop.
Yeah.
I mean, they're sitting ducks. Yeah, they're sitting ducks.
I don't know, when I got on one for the first time, man, it was leaking oil on the inside. And I remember yelling at the crew chief. I was like, hey, boss, man, there's stuff coming out of the roof. He's like, tell me when it stops. That's when the problem, when it stops leaking. So, I mean, they're made to take some pain, but.
Yeah.
My family is the same way as far as, like, missing the mm-hmm. wars. Like, everyone dating way back, same with my family. Like, my dad was born in 59. My grandpa was, but he was too old for, too young for World War II. Like, just missed all the wars. So, but super patriotic. The first movie I ever saw in a movie theater was Platoon. Should not have seen that because I was about 6 years old.
Kind of scared you.
But I remember the helicopter scenes from Platoon, yeah. And I've obviously seen it since then. And that's when you talk about that, that's immediately what I think about, is like those scenes of like going to get the guys out of the jungle.
Hey, so what movies do a good job with helicopters? You know how I'm talking about, like Top Gun, pilots, and SEALs and SEAL movies. So
there's not really any helicopter movies. Yeah, Black Hawk Down was a good one.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, what about We Were Soldiers when the guys go in?
That's a good one.
Black Hawk Down.
We Were Soldiers.
What about Apocalypse Now when they're coming in, when the air cab's coming in? Speakers on the side. Oh, so good, right?
Yeah, so that's cool, motivating.
If you could have been playing that when you pulled my ass off the mountain, bro, that
would have
been
points, man. I was probably humming it as I was coming in.
I swear, if I would have heard that, I'm hearing it now, though. Yeah. I'm gonna tell everybody that you did have that plan. Is that cool?
Yeah, that is good.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Such a good
song. Helicopters are awesome. I mean, they're very versatile. It got me out of a lot of, tight squeezes.
So how long did it take you to get good at it? Or to get to where you weren't feeling like you were, I was saying,
we just fly probably 3 or 4 times a week, and we do scenarios, and we push ourselves. We go out and just brownout after brownout, or we'll land up on the mountains in the high altitude because it's thinner air. Or we'll go out over water and, try to get in that spray and work with the PJs, work with ground teams. We'll do all these scenarios, and we'll even take out comm troops and say, okay, you're the survivor, and we'll do different things.
If you're not familiar with the term brownout, it's when they come into land, if it's over dirt, sand, or anything like that, it creates a vacuum, a tornado, and it shoots it straight up the air. I mean, you can't see anything.
Yeah, sometimes the dust cloud goes up over 100 feet.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most impressive thing to see on the side. Being in it is completely different altogether as well. Yeah.
So, as a very naive person with all military talk, can you fly any kind of helicopter? Or are you training
just like a bicycle. Yes. But I don't know how to start it. I mean, if you get it started for me,
okay, so
I could pick it up and hover it, yes. A Chinook.
All right, so it's like jumping in, say, a regular car to an 18-wheeler to like a something. Yeah. You got to know what buttons do what to get that sucker going.
And an 18-wheeler, you might, or a bus might be a bigger, wider turn. And okay, tell me some of the specifics. But it's flying is flying. Once you get out of the hover and you start moving forward, it's just like an airplane.
So it's what were you trained in specifically? Like what helicopters were you?
So I started out in the jets, but I just flew some Cessnas in Hondo out by Uvalde out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then T-37s, they've been replaced by T-6s now. So flew that, and then I tracked into helicopters, went to Fort Rucker and we flew the Huey.
How's that?
Vietnam era.
What's that like flying that?
It's a pig, but it was fun. I didn't know any better. Now I like the 60 a lot better. It's a lot more responsive. Sure, the Huey's old school. You got to worry about that rotor on top because you can do things where it can bonk, bonk, and then depart. Mm. And just like in Vietnam, I said there wasn't really very many helicopter guys in the Hanoi Hilton. They're all fighter guys because the fighter guys can eject.
Yeah.
The helicopter guys, they're like an anvil. So they're going in, unfortunately.
That's so scary. And if there's a helicopter crash, there's not typically survivors, right?
Theoretically, we practice auto rotations, trying to get it on the ground as safe as possible. And we've got land immediately. And if it starts vibrating, get it on the ground because things can happen real bad real quick. But yeah, it's a survivable aircraft, but you got to be within parameters. You got to have the rotor. You sling a blade or you do things and it starts tearing itself apart.
What kind of helicopter was your brother in when he was in that crash?
A 60.
It hit the top of a
guide wire on a refueling vessel.
Yeah,
and most people don't know that he was in a helicopter crash.
That's why he had to retire years later. Just the injuries caught up with him, and
if you can land wheels up, even hard, the helicopters. Got a 15G stroking system in the mains, our seat stroke, the back seat stroke.
15Gs?
It's survivable, but I mean, in a hard crash, it's usually the speed and then the fuel tank coming, breaking loose and coming through the back of the cockpit. That's what.
Oh my gosh.
And the fire. So we try to land, zero out our airspeed and just prang it in. That's.
Did your brothers actually hit ground?
No, it's a ship. Landed on the ship. On the superstructure, hanging off the boat.
Not good.
Yeah. There was fatalities in that, which is terrible. But
I was down in Florida doing the physical therapy when I got the call about him. Mm-hmm. I was in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a great story.
So scary.
And as a matter of fact, I ran into the guy. Well, I told you I go down to Florida to do my physical therapy. I was there 1 year doing it, and I ran into the guy who was flying the bird that crashed.
Wow.
With my brother. And I was like, hey, man, what are you doing here? He crashed another one.
Shouldn't be flying.
Well, I think he's walking away from him. Might be a great pilot.
So, how long were you in the like, how long was your service before Red Wing? How experienced were you?
I was a senior major. I hadn't pinned on lieutenant colonel or 05 yet. So, I had been flying for years. I started flying in 94, somewhere. And this was 2005, so what's mm-hmm. that, 12 years?
Yeah.
Of flying a ton.
Yeah.
And so what number deployment were you on when you got stationed in Afghanistan, when we were there, out there together?
I'd done probably 7 or 8 deployments, but not, they were Northern, Southern Watch, Turkey, Kuwait, stuff like that. This was my first deployment to Afghanistan.
How long were you out there?
3. Before I picked up?
Yeah, before we met.
2 months.
Okay, that's
less
right.
than two
so
months.
So we were out there about 3 months.
Yeah.
3 months too. We ripped in the
I
same
got there
time.
In May. You probably got there in April.
That's right. That's yeah. right.
So I wasn't there that long, and it was a slow deployment. At the time, we weren't helping the Army with medevac. We were strictly CSAR, and the only thing we did was if it was too dark, illumination, less than 20% illumination, the Army wouldn't fly at night. And
God,
if
I didn't remember that.
The threat, and if the threat was too high, they weren't going in. So we'd go when the threat was too high or it was too dark. And we mostly just did some Dutch special forces, some ANA, Afghan Army AMA's guys, yeah, yeah. and we'd do some of that stuff. But it was a pretty slow deployment. I was calling Penny multiple times a day because we weren't doing much. We were 72. Normal, when it's busy, we're 12 on, 12 off, and you're that for the whole deployment, 4 months.
Yeah.
This one, we were changing. On 72 hours, and then we're off 72 hours to do whatever. We just would hold the beepers, but nothing would happen. Then we'd usually fly off of alert, so it's pretty slow deployment. And then we got the call when we didn't know what it was for. Pack a 3-day bag, you're going up to Bagram.
Let's go ahead and get into that. So you are, what station were you at in Afghanistan.
Kandahar.
You were in
Kandahar. So down near the Helmand, mm-hmm. about four and a half hour flight up to Bagram. So this was the desert, the Barstow, and we were getting called up into the Rockies, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And what were you thinking when, what was that call like?
What were you doing?
We yeah. were watching, the night prior, I remember we were watching, what's that stupid show, their puppets?
America.
Oh, Team America. That's yeah. all we watched.
Hey, because that was that deployment. That
That's
was that
every
deployment.
Time we would fast rope out of a helicopter, that, we would scrap. Yeah. Oh, never mind. No, anyways, started on that. I know. Yeah, I forgot about
go down
that.
A rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah, we
so
did.
So we were watching that movie, and we heard that a Chinook.
My God,
crashed.
Did you scream that when you came in? Please no, tell me no. you did, dude. I'm just thinking out loud. No.
America. Oh, yeah, anyways. We heard a Chinook crashed, and we went to our intel guys. And they couldn't find anything about it. We saw it on CNN, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were like, why can't they find anything about it? We didn't know at the time, but we thought it was weird. And we had heard that a Predator, a UAV, went missing or crashed on the Pakistan border in the mountains down south. So we're like, we stayed up all night, went to bed during the day, because if anything, we were going to be called at night, and got woke up about noon to a magic went over the radios.
What does that mean?
Yeah, you don't say that. At the time, it was wasn't classified, but it was real world. It's hit the fan.
There's some things we keep. It's yeah, just like he's saying, it's not a classified thing, but it's understood. We don't ever talk about it.
You never would hear it. You'd never hear that over the radio. We'd have training words or this that.
Yeah.
So the first thing that went through my mind was somebody's going to get their ass chewed for that. They're in trouble.
Isn't that funny? That's the first
putting thing, it yeah, over the radio. Over, you would never say that out loud.
Yeah.
So then we go in. And they said, pack a three-day bag, you're going to Bagram, up north. And we didn't have anything, so we were thinking, well, maybe it has to do with the Chinook. But I was focused on the Pred, like they're wanting us to go search the hills in Bagai country for a sensor or something off of a UAV. And I'm like, this is stupid. We're not going to go hang it out for that.
What does that mean, a UAV, for the listeners that don't understand that?
They're just the remote-controlled
like a drone. Aerial
vehicle. A drone.
A drone.
Yeah, a drone went mm-hmm. down okay. on the Pakistan border. So we, Skinny and I, were on alert.
And that's an op we do. We'd go retrieve them. That yeah. happened more than you'd think. Yeah. We'd have to go get them. Mm-hmm.
So we would, we took off. A third helicopter flew up the next day. But me and Skinny flew our two aircraft with our crews up to Bagram. And we had our replacement. So it was getting close to the 4th of July. We were supposed to be home the 4th of July. She had big plans for me at the house. And I was calling every day, and then I suddenly stopped calling. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But we get up to Bagram. It's getting dark now, dinner time. And we'd been to Bagram. And we've got these temporary hooches and this, that, but they whisked us on behind the fence. And we never play. It's literally a black-walled compound. And
damn
it's
right
got all
was.
It's got all the all the shaggity shaggies yeah, and stuff man. That they're self-supportive.
Yeah, you know who we are.
We've got the 160th, this, that. We see them come and go, but we're Air Force Rescue. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're trained, but our mission set's different. So they brief us. They come in. And we went into this plywood, everything's plywood there. And they sat us down at a table like this and made all 14
Real quick,
of us.
You say that, is that because most Air Force bases are like super nice? He always talks about that, how Air Force bases.
Baskin and Robbins and the freaking mall with the volleyball.
It is true.
Thank you. Right there.
But It's just because it's a deployed location. Everything's plywood, it seems like.
Yeah. Well, I've except always... I mean, obviously, he's my source of information. I don't really have a lot of other people giving me
I think I'm
info,
exaggerating. I'm not.
But
I'm
he
like,
always
man, straight
says,
up.
Go Air Force. They've got the nicest stuff. And if you're going to go overseas...
I remember going to Fort Rucker, and this was their show base, and it was an armpit at the time. It was terrible. And they complained because our tents have air conditioning units on it. You're in Iraq, for crying out loud. But, yeah. You know, oh. They get in trouble.
Leather and, recliners and air conditioners. And I mean an air conditioner.
They do treat their people right.
Right,
so, yeah.
Where you, the team guys are literally
they had a Pizza Hut with a swimming pool. I thought it was
boxes.
A mirage, man. We
like,
walked the whole back of this damn
listen
airplane.
To this guy. So then we go behind this started. We go behind this black wall,
yeah.
And you should have seen their gym. You should have seen their thing. So you
yeah,
can't say
nice.
That.
Like,
yeah,
no, okay. Okay, that's a great
so
point.
So regular Army, regular Navy, maybe, but... We don't come close to what they have, but we
see
had to
si-
we
right
had to
there.
Sit
like,
down we had to sit down and sign non-disclosure statements,
oh,
and
wow.
We all had to fill out this paperwork. We're sitting there, 14 of us, before they would even read us in to the classified op of Operation Red Wings.
Oh my gosh!
So then they read us in, and we're just sitting in these little folding chairs in a room about this big, and they said we think someone's alive. Because we got some clicking on the 243 nothing, our rescue, the emergency freak. And
that was me playing that sucker like a banjo, bro.
Yeah.
I was trying to get y'all.
Yeah. So we're like, okay, this is weird, but they didn't know if it was SEALs or SEALs or someone, because we'd already lost in Anaconda a SEAL off of the ramp.
Oh, that was happening too, which you're about.
So we thought maybe someone fell out of the helicopter when it got shot down. So we didn't know specifics. They just gave us, but they said, all we know is we're down. You need to go to Jalalabad and just stay up all night and wait for further words. And Jalalabad was probably an hour, hour and a half flight by helicopter south towards the Pakistan border, right on the Pakistan border. Mm-hmm. That's where they pushed when they went in and got bin Laden. They pushed out of Jalalabad. And that's right by Assadabad, which is the mouth of the canyons.
That was a big thing when the Russians were in there too, that place.
Yeah, Jalalabad was an old Soviet base.
J-Bad.
Yeah, J-Bad.
There's
they call
a canyon
it.
That goes through. It's, God, yeah. I thought about this
so anyways,
a while, man.
We go down there. Now it's middle of the night. We sat, PJ sat up their SATCOM antennas, and we just waited.
Real quick, for the listeners that just don't know lingo and all that, the PJ
is
a pararescue that is... The special forces
it's
side
Air Force special forces, yeah.
Of the Air Force, and they are trained to, when you're going in with a helicopter, they get out and retrieve, right?
See, that's what Marcus wanted to do, but he didn't score that high on the
I didn't
ASVAB.
Get high on my aptitude test. all of my buddies that I graduated with, a lot of them are dead now, but I mean, I had the best time with them. I just...
With PJs?
Good bunch
oh, yeah,
of
but
man.
A lot of people don't know that. I mean, you know, you hear about SEALs,
exist.
You
yeah,
hear
yeah.
about Rangers and Green Berets.
There's not very many of them.
You don't hear a lot
there's
about
PJs.
There's
not a ton of them.
There's not a lot of them.
They embed some of them with the Tier 1 guys.
Yeah, yeah.
They're medical experts. But they'll, you know, jump out of planes. They
scuba
dive.
They,
do they do all that stuff. High angle rescues, swift water rescues. They'll do, sometimes they do too much.
Yeah, little bastards
you guys,
trying to get in our group.
Yeah,
yeah
you guys
they do that too.
Focus, you know, but yeah.
They do that. They do it so much, man. It's cool.
Anyways, good times.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify because a lot of our listeners, you know, they're interested in all of it. They just don't know the lingo. So.
Yeah, they're the guys that go down on the hoist in Vietnam that would get the Medal of Honors and stuff.
Dude.
To pick up the guys and their combat medics, if you will. But.
I mean, you ever see those helicopters rolling around with a fishing line with a piece of bait hanging off of it that looks like a human? That's a PJ.
Yeah.
So when you're saying that, I'm picturing Mike Thornton and Tommy Norris,
Bat 21, yeah, all them
SEALs
that
were pulled
out. Hey, let me tell you something about them Vietnam PJs. Some of the stories about those jokers are insane.
Well, weren't they pulled out by PJs?
Yeah. Out, and they're like E3s.
Yeah, man.
These are kids.
One of the guys, he'd been shot multiple times, thought he was dead, put him in a body bag. And went to go throw him away, right, with the rest of that stuff. And he's still alive. I mean, and kept going back.
Some of them would go back and back and back.
Keep going back,
and then they would eventually die. But they saved, like,
dozens
of
dudes. Yeah. And then eventually they'd die. Same way on Operation Anaconda. The PJ that died on the mountain, he was my my sweet mate at 18 Delta going through med school. He died. We just graduated, and that was his first op. And he
got him too, right?
Yeah, he got killed.
Chapman, right?
Yeah, he got shot in the back. And dude, I remember hearing that. I couldn't believe he was out there. It went that fast because I was still in a training
pipeline. You know, the interesting thing, when we meshed in with the 160th and was with their mission planning stuff, we were talking to those Chinook guys, and they were like cool in the gang.
Yeah.
And they would say, oh, yeah, back when I was in Anaconda, these are the same guys that flew into Anaconda. They're the guys that went and got when this HMC-130 crashed in the snow. They're the ones that went in and rescued them.
That story's crazy.
They're the ones that these guys, they'd been to all these things. I'm like, oh, okay, well, we haven't been to the dance much, you know. So
they're there now, though.
Okay, so you're in J-Bad. Sorry, I took a little.
So we're in J-Bad. Yeah. We're listening for further words. And about 4 in the morning, we got words that they had triangulated via national assets, other aircraft, different things, this clicking.
So when you were in J-Bad, did they finally read you in on like the whole story that
that was up in Bagram? When we signed the non-disclosure, they briefed us up everything.
Okay.
As much as they knew about the op they were on and the frantic call for help, the Chinooks went in. They don't like going in the middle of the day. It was about 4 in the afternoon, I believe. And they were, as you know, going to put in the teams, and they took an RPG up the rear end. So
yeah. Okay, so you're in J-Bad, 4 in the morning.
We get words that we're going to go up near the crash site. And look, it was about a square kilometer, maybe a little bigger, of 3 points of interest where they had triangulated clicking.
And is that the F-16 pilots that are triangulating that? Or
Navy pilots, F-16, national assets, whatever. Once it hit the fan, everything shifted to, is there an American alive there?
Mm-hmm.
And we were just a small piece of the puzzle. Navy assets, constant F-16s, A-10s, Apaches.
Yeah, once that angel all types of stuff. Fallen angel, man.
They did say they were dropping cell phones.
Well, that was for me. Yeah,
they were dropping cell phones. They were dropping a lot of things, trying to say we need to talk, because we were very nervous about this clicking, because it's pretty easy to get a dead guy's radio. And lure you.
Oh, that was happening.
So is that what it is? It was just your radio, and you've got like a button on the side.
There's an emergency frequency that you can tap into that does a code that they pick up. Like, hey, and then you can triangulate that position.
What we had heard was your radio was damaged.
It was.
He got blowed up.
I had 2 of them, and so there's different freaks now, and there's multiple things that go wrong. When I was at the bottom of the last thing I could do to get help. And all it is clicking. That's all I was doing. And
but whose radio were you using?
I had 2 of them. It was the one I got issued. And there was other frequencies that get picked up from the other radios, from some of the bad guys had gotten their radios, and they know how to do it. They turn those things on, so there was multiple pings.
So they'll bring you in.
Yeah, bring in.
And his antenna was damaged, is what I heard. So all even if he tried, down. Even if he had tried to talk, it was just break and squelch.
Yeah, it wouldn't
work. That's what we could hear. But if a bad guy had it, and a bad guy tried to say, and he knew English, he'd still sound like a bad guy.
Right.
He wouldn't sound like us.
There's also certain things that I have to do.
Yeah.
Like once they pick that up, there's certain codes that I know to type, so they'll know. The bad guys don't know this stuff.
They don't know that
stuff.
Like
a Morse code type thing.
But we couldn't get, and the radios now are way better. These were pretty archaic back in the time. Yeah. They've now got newer radios that can do instant messaging, and you don't need to have the radio on. You can just turn it on for short periods of time, save battery life, do lots of cool things, and it can communicate a lot easier via satellite instead of with him line of sight.
We used
mostly.
To have to sit up an antenna with this. I mean, most of our weight was batteries for the radio, for comms. That's the most important thing, communication. We were the link, right? Just to keep that going. And the minute they break that off, well, one element has to stop. If we were under fire, they can't make a move until I call them in, because I wouldn't want to call them in on something bad. And if we don't have any way to do that, that's a problem. So there's multiple ways we communicate, all the way to the last one, where I was just like,
and it was his last. He was on his last leg. So this is two or three days later, and he's been in a world of hurt for a while. So supposedly you saw us, right?
That's right.
Okay, so Skinny went down, and it's 4 in the morning. We went out of J-Bad, 15 minutes up to Asadabad, and then up towards the crash site. Middle, up high in the mountains, and we're near the crash site. We're near where they just shot down a helicopter, so we knew they had the capability and this and that. And Skinny went down, and that's when you're low and slow in a helicopter, you're a sitting duck.
Mm-hmm.
Going fast, it's harder to hit. But down the ground, they've got small arms and RPGs and stuff that can get you, rocket-propelled grenades. I'm orbiting, trying to support as best as possible while he's hanging it out and looking. We had night vision goggles. We got a FLIR screen. And we're on the open freak, 243 nothing. Usually we use code words. We have word, letter, numbers of the day. We have all this kind of stuff.
Colors.
Crypto, and only their radio can hear it. We're in plain open, 243 nothing. This is Air Force Rescue. Show yourself. And we're talking, and we could hear him clicking. We could hear very faint clicks. And we're like, gosh, dang it, if that's... And it was just a bad feeling. And
but there's
then,
no way for you to, like, zero in on where the clicking comes from.
And you think we could see.
Yeah.
You could be going like this, and we wouldn't be able to see.
Yeah. Maybe.
They have orange panels. They have strobe lights. They have mirror flashes. Things that'll catch our eye. It's a lot harder to see from the air than you think it is.
Yeah.
We have multiple eyes looking out.
Especially in that area.
But we didn't, and it's rugged. And
a lot of people assume that all of Afghanistan is like a flat, dry desert.
Mm-mm.
But in this specific area, it was like if you're in the mountains in Colorado. It's big trees.
It's the start of the Himalayas.
Yeah,
it's rugged, pine trees, right. Granite cliffs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not no Kandahar or
right.
Yeah, little mountains. So we're sitting there, and we thought we could hear clicking. And then the worst time to fly with goggles is at dusk or dawn. So the sun starts coming up, and it's too bright. You can't see. And you lift your goggles up, and it's pitch black. And then you put them on. So it's terrible.
Yeah.
And then now it's broad daylight. Now we're hanging it out. We see guys wandering around with shovels over their shoulders and bad guys just playing good, probably. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's very unnerving.
Or a mix of bad and good. And that's another
very
thing
unnerving.
A lot of people don't understand that I've learned is that the bad guys and the good guys are together.
Oh, totally.
It's not like how, you know, people in the U.S., you just don't affiliate yourself with the bad people. There, it's just, it's a melting pot.
Yeah.
It's your brother in the house could be Al-Qaeda or Taliban or whatever, and you could be a good guy that wants to help everybody. There's just, yep. It's
and then literally go out and do something bad for a day and then go back and do something
are mixed.
Yeah.
So it's not like there's a concentrated area of just bad.
That also gives them off, too. If they have a bad day or something like that, man, go over there and bust up an American.
Yeah.
I mean, they're there. They don't care. But, you know, it's mm-hmm. like that. It really is.
So it was interesting that we could see people, but we couldn't see. And at the time, we didn't know who. And then we literally flew below our bingo, which means we have to leave. We've only got enough gas to get down to Asadabad. And we do that, and we leave. Marcus sees us leave, and that probably was an awesome feeling. He's
to
on
move.
His last leg. Last leg, and this we were there to get him out, and we couldn't see him, and he couldn't show himself for fear of numerous things. So then we go Asadabad via SATCOM from Al Udeid in Saudi Arabia. No, they got gas for you at J-Bad. So we overfly the gas. We got our low fuel lights flashing.
Oh my gosh.
And we get back to J-Bad. There's no tankers. So then they want us to fly to some other op point, some army post. And we're like, no, we're stopping at J-Bad, figure out the gas. They said, okay. And this was a small Marine outpost at the time, not very many tents. They said, go get some sleep. You've been up forever. We'll figure out the gas and get back with you. So that's what we did. And then about dinner time, a Chinook came in with a big bladder of gas in the back. They called it a fat cow. And filled us both up. Now it's dark. And they're like, well, since you're here, why don't you stay another night? And remember, this was a small Marine outpost. Not very many Marines. They really didn't even have food there. The thing that I remember, and it seems weird that I still remember it, but Pop-Tarts and Red Bull was all they had, it seemed like. And
that's all you need. Some
MREs. I could live off Pop-Tarts.
That's all you need. Red Bull, that's all you need.
So we're sitting there. And remember, I'd been calling Penny 1-2 times a day. And I'm just in the middle of nowhere wishing I could call, but I can't. Eating Pop-Tarts and Red Bull and just waiting. We did get word back from Bagram that, unfortunately, the clicking stopped and our heart sunk. Mm. Either battery's dead, died, got captured. We didn't know what had happened. And about midnight, the weather was rolling in. About midnight, we got called out to Camp Blessing, which is a small Marine outpost in the middle of nowhere up the Peck River Valley, mm-hmm. up from Asadabad.
Isn't Camp Blessing where the elder took the note?
That's why we were called there, yeah. was the village elder. Some village elder had hiked out of the mountains mm-hmm. and had he had information about an American in their village. And we're like, yeah, whatever. So we tried to go. It was some of the hardest rain I'd been in.
It was amazing.
We had to turn around.
That was a biblical storm.
We had to go back to J-Bad. It was so bad. Wait for 2 hours. Then we went up this tight canyon. It reminds me of Salt Lake up by Snowbird and Alta. Little Cottonwood Canyon. Tight granite cliffs. And we're flying up there in the weather. And then Skinny went in, landed. While I'm trying to just orbit at the Y in the river where Camp Blessing was, and it was, I wasn't even looking at Skinny. I'm just trying not to hit the rock walls. It was so tight, and it was dark. I just remember how dark it was. And our FLIR doesn't work when there's humidity and when it rains as good, but my goggles and my FLIR, usually one's good because they're different. The infrared camera is good.
Forward-looking infrared, that's what FLIR stands for.
Or my goggles, infrared. Which are phosphorus-based. But both were bad. Come to find out 2 days later that my FLIR was broke.
Oh, my
it
gosh.
It wasn't working that
well. Everybody who has something to do with everything went wrong.
If yeah. I would have known.
I mean, yeah. everything went wrong.
So Skinny got this village elder. We took him down to Asadabad to get debriefed. Which I was told by, and we saw him, some big shaggies, FBI agents in the middle of nowhere. And you're like, I mean, we'd work with CIA and stuff overseas and other customers, if you will, but FBI, but they had Columbia gear and backpacks. And we just dropped this old dude.
Yeah, they're great.
And he had his ISOPREP, a note that Marcus had written some of his classified statements on mm-hmm. that we all, when we go to combat, we have. Our own numbers, letters, colors, whatever, and statements. Mine was girlfriends. I didn't know her at the time. Hair color and stuff. My car, my first car was a 1979 yellow four-door Chevy Chevette.
Nice. You know,
people think it was a Corvette, but it was a Chevette. that you could get a lot from because we don't want to burn it. What's the sum of the last two letters of the year? What's the second letter of the color? What's that? We don't just say what color was it? Yellow.
Yeah.
You know?
So we try to save as much as we can if we've got to utilize further interrogation. Because what we don't want is some bad guy clicking his radio.
Yeah.
And we go in and then they light us up.
Right.
They call that a SAR trap search.
And they do it for sure.
Yeah.
They're good at it. I mean, you got to think, as good as we are, they're on the other side playing. It's like a chess game.
Yeah.
Right.
And they watch. That was the biggest thing, too, because they communicate nonstop all the time. It's, It's like the cartels up there. I mean, they may be in the Mountain Boys, but don't let that fool you.
Yeah.
They're freaking good. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So we picked them up, dropped them off, get back to J-Bad, and they said, just wait until morning. And finally, about 8:30, they let us fly back to Bagram.
Did they tell you that the note was good?
We didn't know. We just knew that he had information. We didn't get all that till we got back to Bagram. So we got back to Bagram, and the first thing I wanted to do was call Penny. Because it had been a couple days. I told my friend to call Penny, but that got all messed up, you know, and he told his wife to tell, and then yeah. It was like, I'm all
whatever
right,
you do,
I'm
just don't out say and about. This.
But he basically, she got the word that Jeff's, Sutton Big's gone, he's out in bad guy, you know, I mean, it's not good. And she had already been watching the news.
So, oh, yeah, that's right, it was all over the news by now,
all
right?
Over yeah. the news, yeah. That missing Navy SEAL and this and that.
Where I was at that point in my life. Because
this is, my mom. So I tell my mom about this.
So I called her, and I was on a base phone. Had to go through the base operator, you know, this, that. And the first thing out of her mouth, you know, are you working anything with that Navy SEAL, missing Navy SEAL, helicopter craft, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
All these questions, and, you know, we just signed non-disclosure statements, and you can get in big trouble. Plus, somebody's probably listening to all the phone calls.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
You're
you
like,
know,
no,
if I
Mom.
Did, yeah, if you did, okay, I'm sorry. She just was happy to hear my voice, and she knew that I was with Mike. So if I was with Mike, I was on a big base with like 20,000 good guys and this, that. When I'm out and about, I'm not around a lot of good guys.
Yeah, we do that. There is code words, so they'll be.
So,
I mean,
so she knows that I'm with Mike. That meant I'm here, but if I'm out and about, that meant it wasn't good. So they said, go get cleaned up. We got some real chow, showered, and we'd been up all night, so we got some rest. Skinny and I were called to a brief.
Had you been up all night? Was it stressful?
Yeah. Skinny and I had been, whatever.
I'm just messed, dude. I'm just.
He's jealous,
I'm just
dude.
I had to be, I had, come on, man.
I had to be rested. I had to be well rested for you. So
it was a good chow. Yeah, I bet it was. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Good food.
I wish I could have some Red Bull, Pop Tart,
Pepsi bottle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the Pepsi bottle.
Yeah. So, anyways, we went back to the brief, and that time is when we got word that yes, indeed, it was a good note. They had already hiked in a 20-man soft team. Because we thought it could have been coerced.
Yeah.
It could have been tortured out of him. But he was alive. He's real bad off. We're going in tonight to get him. And it was Latrell. So we're like, okay, come back an hour later, 16:30, for a flight brief. And that was the one I was mentioning, too, where me and Skinny were just going to be with our PJs, 5-mile offset, and we're just there if we're needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They've got extraction tools and different things that we could go if somebody pranged it up or got hurt or crashed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sitting there, and that's the brief. They're saying they're going to bring a Chinook in, back them up, get them on the ledge. And because it was a small ledge, and they could have easily backed up. You'll see them put their ramp down, and the guys all get on. And they said there was a... another American, cleanly shaven 19-year-old, I remember they said, which no one was cleanly shaven, and that's pretty young, 10 clicks away. And there was so much confusion, not knowing this, that, the commander at the time decided to hike the 20-man soft team after they got Marcus to this other survivor, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's only one person. I can use my Chinooks better. And that's when he looked over at Skinny and I and said, 60s, you got the pickup. And that's when I didn't hear him at first because, quite frankly, I wasn't listening that loud. It was all for them. And I'm like, did he just say we got the freaking pickup?
Yeah, what'd he say?
And I'm like, serious? And Skinny's like, yeah, I think so. Now everybody's looking at us and talking. Then they wanted to know all this stuff. How do we operate? How are we going? Here's the satellite imagery of the ledge. this is the plan, this is the time. You both can't fit on it. It's not that big. So who's going to go in? Are you both need to go in? I guess there's only Marcus, so probably only one. All these questions. And we had an AC-130, which is a decked out gunship.
Spectre.
And we had a flight of A-10s. And they were very interested in knowing how we were going to get in and get out of the objective. Because I've always wondered this, H hour, is that for hit? What's the H for?
Yeah.
It's for hit, right? Yeah. They called it H hour. I didn't know what the H meant, but I assume since they're all operators, it's a
hit. When we're talking about aircraft, when you're talking about a Spectre and A-10s, that means you're going in there to screw some stuff up.
Yeah. So H hour was at 11:30 at night.
So H hour means like that's the time that all hell's breaking needs loose to happen?
I was going to be on the ledge.
At H hour.
At H hour. And we train. We talked about all these training flights, plus minus 2 seconds. So I was going to be on the ledge at 11:30. Mm-hmm. H minus 5.
11:30 p.m.?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. H minus 5 was 5 minutes prior to H hour. They were going to light up the place. And that painting I showed you in the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. It shows the gunship shooting, the A-10 shooting, bombing.
Thing you ever seen,
and they lit. They started lighting that place
4th of July.
So this is something that is very different from the movie. When people ask, like,
you could have done the landing in the movie. It was in a football field during the day.
Yeah, during daytime. Kind of, I make that perfectly clear when I talk about that.
I mean,
had no control, but that's for good reason.
I know.
We
at least it was an Air Force helicopter.
We are definitely like very, you know, pro the movie and all that. But that was something when people ask what is different and what's not, that is a specific thing that was extremely different.
It would have been hard to film and capture that. It would have been
completely different.
And it would have been dark. And I was like, yeah, they could have just like close your eyes and that's how dark it was. And it was weather.
It gets better. Keep going.
So we're getting nervous. We're getting nervous. And finally, that's when Skinny, and remember, Skinny was flight lead. The week prior, I was flight lead. This lead, he was flight lead. And I was happy as happy because he led us up to Bagram. He went in and got the village elder. He was the low bird while I was the high bird covering. He was doing all that stuff. But tactically, we send number two in because it's a lot safer in a lot of situations if you have to go around and this, that. So you mark the survivor, pop up. You're still got energy. Remember, you're not slow. Because if he's starting an approach and he starts getting real slow, I got to speed up to protect him. And then he goes around. Now we're real close. It's dark. But if he keeps his energy while I'm slow, he's already up and got guns to bear on me as I'm
real slow. Helicopter had guns on it.
Yeah, both of them did.
Okay.
When we went
bait.
In, when
one
we,
them, that's yeah. called a bait op too, well, man. Like one of them just to distract so the other yeah. can get in there.
So they pop up and people are looking so I can get in. Interesting enough, when we were coming in, so they had basically just said, he said a trailer spooky. And what that meant is I was going to send my trail bird in. And I'm going to do a spooky pattern. And that's when my heart sunk. That's when I was, holy crap. And then they all started looking at me, wanting to know what we're going to do. And we had the imagery. We briefed it up and went and told our guys, because at the time they still thought we were just 5 miles offset. So...
Went and told them, we said, the PJs.
Yeah, the crew, the rest of the crew. It was just Skinny and I that were in the meeting. And we started prepping our birds and getting ready to go. And these pre-planned ops, we don't do a lot of pre-planned ops. We get a call, somebody's hurt, we go in, we're getting stuff as we're going. We do it, and then we're done. This, I had like 5 hours to think about, or 4 hours. And you're just like, okay, I don't like this. And all I'm thinking about is Penny and my four small boys back in Tucson. And like, dude, you can't screw this up. And we had the A-team. We were well-trained. And I remember that hour and a half flight down there, you know, just super quiet, wanting to know. As I said, my flight engineer was a two-tour Vietnam guy. He was cool in the gang.
Yeah,
he
was like, this is great, nothing. Right?
But the college student was pinging. What can I shoot? What can I shoot? What can I shoot? I'm like, dude, we're not going to freaking shoot anything. There's 20.
That's a real thing.
20 soft guys on the ground. Unless we're taking direct fire, we cannot return fire.
So, and dudes will kill anything.
Yeah.
So, I'm just picturing Hunter in that situation.
Exactly.
19 years old, helmet big in her head, dude. What do you want me to kill?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they are. They're awesome. Yeah.
So, and I was worried about weight because that's the only thing I have control of now. Mm-hmm. Is that I know the density, altitude, I know the temperature, I know where I'm going to land, I know what I need, but we're flying, and as I said, the weather the night prior was terrible. It still wasn't that good. Overcast, scattered storms, lightning, and we're blacked out because we don't want to turn on lights or cockpit lights even.
Yeah.
So we've got these green slime lights. They're just a green haze on the back, and I can tell where I'm at because they're in a shape of a Y on the back of Skinny's tail. So I stack a little high and I can see him, but I'm close and I don't dare leave because I've lost buds that try to rejoin and they mesh rotors and then everybody dies. So I didn't dare go out over the river. I didn't want to lose him. And you're in combat. You don't want to, okay, I'll orbit and wait for you. You know, you want to just get in and get out.
Yeah.
I remember one of the A-10s was having trouble with his targeting system. So we had to go up towards Blessing and turn around in this tight canyon, which was a little dicey. And about that time, it had started. And you could see up in the mountains, it looked like a storm going off. Because it was steep. We had to kind of climb up. And Skinny had a more powerful bird. His FLIR was working. I mean, all these things. I think there was a reason why I was supposed to pick up Marcus because it just worked out. You know, I'm not patting myself on the back, but he was supposed to get off the mountain that night.
Mm-hmm.
And we're climbing up, and it's the whole time there, I was nervous thinking about, but as soon as I dumped that gas, you know, you go into autopilot, you go into mission mode, and you're not thinking of anything but the mission now.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's distracted. You're hyper-focused on what needs to happen, and you're going. I just remember we got 5 radios, a lot of chatter going on, and you don't need, it seems like they want to talk to you at the most inopportune time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, talking like Saudi Arabia and back at Bagram. You're like, shut up, dude.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you in a minute. We're going. It's all happening. They knew kind of where the bad guys were, and they're doing diversionary strikes. They're just blowing this place up, except for where we were coming. And the objective, they called it Barracuda, was the LZ, the landing zone. And it was supposed to be authenticated and a single IR strobe light was going to be in the center of it. And you can see that for a long time. And it's just a strobe light with an IR cover. So only we can see it through goggles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as soon as they started blowing this canyon up, all those idiots turned on their strobe lights on their helmets to say friendly. Because that's what they do. I mean, when they see, and Marcus knows, I'm turning my strobe light on, so, hey.
You don't shoot me.
These are friendlies over
there's
here.
There's other things we have, too, but that's one of the things we have. Yeah, absolutely.
And so they all turn on their strobe lights. And now, because they're surrounding the village, they're protecting.
You can't
they're
believe what this looked like up there, man.
There's just strobe lights going. There's stuff going on all around us. Me and Skinny are crescendoing our voices. We're kind of freaking out. Like, I don't know which one of the strobes. We're freaking. He's supposed to mark it. I'm supposed to go land. And it's just getting, and it seemed like all was just really getting bad. But I was hoping the AC-130, because at the brief, I said, don't you have one of those big-ass lanterns that you can, like, light up a football field? From way up, high, and it's infrared, so the bad guys can't see it, and you just see it, and it's just like, oh, like those big things at the mall that, you know, like that, but it's got an IR filter on it. And he said, yeah, it depends on what we're doing at the time, what sensors we got up, but H minus 30 seconds, I'll light that ledge up like a football field, he said. So I was like, okay, at least, because I couldn't see nothing.
Yeah.
And then right about 30 seconds prior, it looked like lightning, you know, and it was the clouds. And they screamed over the Rescort Freak. Halos was our call sign. Halos, negative burn, negative burn. And they couldn't burn through the clouds.
Oh, my
gosh. And
so
now I'm not going to get the light. We don't know which freaking strobe is the right one. And it's and the last thing we want to do is start orbiting up there. One, we're highlighting, like, oh, this is maybe a point of interest we're interested in.
Yeah.
We want to get in and get out.
Yeah.
And right then, the A-10s had heard it. He cycled his targeting pod or laser over to Barracuda. Instead of dropping a bomb on it, he just lit it up. And it was like, as I called it, a flashlight from God, just this laser beam right on the ledge. Right on the ledge. Right, and there's probably a strobe light in the middle of that. And it was like a flashlight beam. And it just went, and Skinny said, out my right door now, popped up. He got into his spooky. I start my approach, and then I was just going to do a pedal turn and land on this ledge that was not much bigger than this room, maybe a little wider. And then it had about a 15-foot cliff face there and then a big drop-off down here.
Which is where we were.
And it kind of went. And I was supposed to land on that ledge, get him, and then dive off. Well, it was all working out good. Now the laser went away. There was a mud hut. I remember a big antenna, a big pole with an antenna. They had those in each of the villages. A tree. And then this rock face. So I was just going to do a pedal turn and land. The footage we saw from the 160th was a green cultivated terrace where they farm their crops or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was dirt. And so I came in and coming in about 15 feet, just had a brownout. And that's, brownouts are bad during the day. Night brownouts are really bad. Night brownouts at altitude are really bad because now your helicopter is in thinner air. Night brownouts in combat at altitude are really, really, really bad. You don't want, and you usually, how you can do it is you hit and roll them on.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't, it was stupid. Yeah, I didn't think about it browning out. And that's when I got scared. That's when, if you've ever been in a traumatic accident or anything, it seems like everything goes slow motion and you're just hyper aware of all things. And I'm thinking of a lot of things. I'm thinking about Penny. I'm thinking about my boys. I'm thinking about Marcus. I'm thinking about, I'm going to freaking crash. I'm thinking, what a failure. I can't believe. And all this is just going on and I'm freaking. The guys in the back are on the floor laying down. They can see straight down, and they're screaming, stop left, because I'm drifting towards the thing where our rotor blades are going to hit the wall.
And that's right.
Dave Gonzalez knew I was going to come back hard right when he heard those guys screaming, stop left. So he took his hands from the throttles down here and caught the collective as I came hard right, probably too hard right. And right when, now, again, thinking all was lost, That 15-foot thing went off. Ours kind of came to a point, but that one was a longer terrace. And about 40 feet out, you could see a bush or grass or something hanging off the edge of
right?
it. Yeah, I equated it to a pot, like with those draping things, like my mom had on the back
like
patio.
Like a fern or something
yeah.
like that is?
Like a fern hanging over. Oh, and yeah. I could see it moving with the rotor wash. And if you think about it, if that's on my windscreen and I go up or down, it changes perspective. And you don't think about it. You don't put an X on there with a grease pencil. It's just, I just instantly because you've got a reference point now.
Right.
Because I didn't have a reference point at all.
Oh my gosh.
And I saw it. Then he called me down. We land. I remember yelling at Cusick, the flight engineer, because I can't see. We had doors on at the time. I can't see but just the black abyss, the cliff. So we're very close to the edge. And later he told me, he's like, sir, I knew that your hands were full. I knew we were fine. And I opted to put us there because he didn't want to put us next to the cliff face.
And I mean, that, it was right there. You left it up that far, man.
That's when they opened the door, and then we're sitting there kicking water out the left, Ben, the gunner. And then these two bad guys start rushing the helicopter because they could have a vest on. They could have a grenade. They could have numerous things. You do not let bad guys get near the helicopter. And they're dressed in man jammies and rushing the
helicopter. At the tail. We're coming with the tail.
And you never even come by a helicopter at the tail.
Never.
Ever. There's a tell.
Never router. Do that.
Yeah,
it's... Unless you've been in a village for a
while. No. This is what happened. This is the best part he left out. So I'm talking about when we were laying on the side of this. Man, I've been yearning to yell this out at you for a long time. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen. When y'all came out that canyon, all I could see was that fluorescent green glow and that bioluminescent spin off those rotors. You could see y'all coming. And the weather was bad. I mean, it sucked. This is one of those things where we're not even doing it justice. It was terrible. And when you, I remember leaning over that ledge, remember how, because it went down, it was completely black. Looking down in there, and all you could see was that green thing coming. It's like some fucking dragon. Excuse my language. I'm sorry, man. But and then it disappears. I swear, for kind of an eternity. And imagine, I was kind of looking over, and he came over on the other side of this table. His rotors poked up over that, and it went from dead quiet to you could hear the gun battle to where that rotor was in our face. I mean, like, he literally, that wall is flying. And as soon as he capped over that ledge, that dust kicked up, man. And I mean, it felt like a tornado just sack lifted over the top of us. You couldn't see in there. You couldn't see anything.
So explain your position at that time. You and Gulab are arm in arm.
Yeah, I'm laying on this ledge. I'd hit me with the morphine, man. So I wasn't feeling any pain. I was kind of giggling. I get happy, apparently. And I had this helmet on that didn't fit with a pair of nods and what looks like a Luke Skywalker lightsaber. And Islid, those Mipleys, and had that sucker on and was pointing everything out. And then they were like, hey, the lieutenant, Ken. If anybody ever wondered if Captain America is real, he is. That lieutenant that came in, he looks just like Steve Rogers. Blonde hair. His kid's freaking in. And he's, I mean, the best dude. He's like, hey, our ride's coming. And I mean, we look down on everything and can see y'all freaking rolling up the hill. And I mean, in your head, you can hear this cool music playing. And when he popped over the top of that, I'm telling you, like, I was leaning my head over the ledge and I had to roll back over because he came up. Like, you're not supposed to be that close to a helicopter ever.
Yeah.
We had no death perception. That was gone.
But you were with
The Green Berets, Gulab was laying on top of me. Yeah, and the Travis Osborne, all of them, all of those guys, Bo, fucking redneck sergeant dude. I mean, these hodgepodge of dudes. A freaking crew. So he fit right in. And I mean, when he poked up over that ledge, we saw him for a half a second. You can see the glow in there a little bit, and then it just went completely black. And he dumped it in there. He didn't give a shit. I'll never forget you coming over the top. I could just see the belly of that thing for half a second, man, and it completely disappeared. That's why we came up at the tail. We had no idea
what it had. Because I moved forward, and they were back here, and I landed, and it was thin, so they really couldn't come to the side.
They had to carry me. Two guys had to carry me, and then there was a guy behind me. We were dressed up in man jammies.
Yeah, Marcus was in
man jammies. He was more than being carried. At this time, he was rushing the helicopter.
Getting the hell out of the way. Yeah, it was like, let's go.
So they were going to shoot him. Until clearly they saw an American behind them, and then that's when...
Okay, this is God's hand right here, because I fell. Remember that? I tripped.
Oh, I didn't know.
I tripped and fell and came over with those two guys, and Travis was standing by me, had that American flag on his chest, had that glint, and the PJ's laser...
That's when they saw it.
Yeah, that's why he pulled up, because he saw that American flag. He was about... Because I didn't have any of that. I was dressed just like a freaking...
As I said, you were supposed to be picked up that night.
Yeah, and here's what happened. Gulab had my weapon. And then they gave it back to me to carry to the bird. So I had my weapon like this. And when they threw me on board, they're like, who are you? I was like, I'm the Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right.
That was one of his action heroes for the authentication. Threw him in the back.
Oh, it's still
just like that. Threw me in the back.
Threw him in the back. And Checky clicked in on the comm and said, go, go, go. And that's all I heard. And we'd probably been on the ground probably 30 seconds.
Whatever.
It wasn't that long.
No, it wasn't, man. It was like 50 minutes because it seemed like freaking ever.
It wasn't that long.
I know, but...
So it was short. We did that. We got him in.
Because you had to kick that water off. Remember that?
Yeah, but that takes 2 seconds.
I'm just saying that added some extra benefit to it because we didn't know that.
Yeah.
And we
had to, you know...
The word on the ground was that everyone was getting on the plane, on the bird. But then that follow-on mission came on, those other two, you know, one of them we can't talk about, right? Okay, so when y'all were kicking that water off, that's what seemed like forever to me. Because then they were like, hey, let's go, and we kind of got up around.
No. It was quicker than he's thinking. Remember, he was hopped up on morphine.
Right.
All right, whatever. I was hopped up on morphine. It seemed like forever.
Well, and that's the interesting thing for me to, as his wife, to hear other people's, you know, perspectives of the story. Everybody has their own version of the story of that time. And it's so crazy to me that everybody that I talk to, the story, it all matches up. I mean, yes, there might be some minutes or whatever messed up, but everybody, it's like a puzzle, and everybody's story fits together just perfectly. And it's so amazing to me that, yes, I mean, I know it's traumatic, and I know it's caused a lot of heartache and really dark times. But if you think back, everybody's become stronger in the end for it. Even like those that we lost, the families come out, like, I'm not saying they're better. That's not what I mean. Like, I'm saying that everybody has, there's a positive that's come out.
From their lives.
There's a positive that has come out of it, whether it's being able to honor these heroes that that didn't make it, and their legacy, their story has impacted so many lives. Think of all of the guys that have signed up for the teams because of this story, or into the Air Force or the Army or whatever because of this story, or that have gone in to be a doctor because they want, you know, like all, I have heard so many stories of people that because of whoever's version of the story, it impacted a random individual so much that it changed the trajectory of their life.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, that is so neat that all these puzzle pieces have changed.
See, because no one can brag about y'all like I can. Lives. I mean, the fact that you had to come and get me. So when I tell a story about you, man, I tell it, people don't believe it. And then you walk up and you'll say it from your perspective and it matches. When it matches up, like, hey, I've told you, man, y'all can't believe it. Everything went wrong for us out there.
Yeah. It was kind of crazy.
It was unbelievable, man.
And but just, it worked.
It worked.
And that was the great thing about it.
It was the craziest thing,
and that's when it hit. When we took off and we were going to go down and do a transload onto a waiting C-130 that had doctors, nurses, this, that, at JBAG.
Oh, yeah, that's what they were going to work on.
We make a call whenever we do a pickup, and it's another word, popcorn. Popcorn plus one. But Gulab jumped on with him, mostly because he wouldn't let go of Gulab. And I said, popcorn plus two. Because they were like, dude, the freaking shepherd's on. I'm like, what? And so there was confusion in our cockpit.
Uh-huh. And that's right. Y'all didn't know that, right?
And we didn't know he was coming on. Yeah. And then the guys, we said, popcorn plus two. And they're like,
who?
Understand popcorn plus two? And I'm like, yes, popcorn plus two. Okay, so what we heard was popcorn plus two.
You're talking to the space shuttle right guys, now, like Apollo 13.
Finally, I'm like, we picked up two guys. Okay. Well, the second guy is not going to JBAD. So we're like, you want us to stop? And they said, yes, drop him off at 8 Asadabad.
Oh, my gosh.
Where we dropped off the village. The other guy. His uncle or dad or whatever. I don't know what he is.
Yeah.
So we drop him off there, and then we take off and go the 15 minutes to JBAD. And that was the first time I saw Marcus, because up front, I'm not really looking back, but I leaned forward and they took him out the left side, and we landed right at the back of the waiting C-130 with his ramp down. And they were, he was under both things. They got him up there. He collapses on a ramp and they start taxiing before the gates or the ramps even up.
I think it was moving before they got me locked down.
Yeah, so then we went, got gas, and then we shut down because we were the thing that night. So the tankers were there. So we got gas shut down, but they were like, well, it's only 11:45. You might as well stay around in case we need you through the night. And I remember shutting down and I just visibly, like this bad, started shaking.
Oh my gosh.
And I'd never felt that. I'd never had that happen. And it was just weird. And Checky's hitting my window. Spanky, you're the man. You know? And those guys are idiots because they have no clue how close we were of dying. You know?
Like on the precipice of death the entire time. Yeah,
but they're going to town and I'm just freaking
cracking
out.
The beers in the bag, being like, woo!
That adrenaline has just left my body. And I just, all there was Red Bulls and Pop-Tarts, but all I wanted
there's your sponsorship right there, bro.
Talk to Penny. But I knew I was out and about. And one of the Marines had heard me say something like that. And he's like, we got a freaking sat phone in the back.
He probably said, just like the Marines like that.
What?
Hey, man, we got a
sat
phone.
That would have been nice. So I went back to the sat phone and... You don't need to call the base operator. You can call directly. Mm-hmm. And I call her cell number. And we had just built a house. And so she was at the fabric store getting fabric for curtains, right, that you were making. And...
Every great story starts that way.
So, yeah. So I'm sitting there and she was like, oh, okay. Are you with Mike? No, I'm out and about. Okay, I don't like that. And then she started asking all these questions and concerned that I was out and about. When am I going to get back? Blah, 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 whatever. And I guess I just was saying everything is really, really good. Okay, I know. Blah, 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 blah. You're in back. Blah, blah, blah. Everything's really, really good. And about the third time I said that, I guess kept saying it. And then it gets quiet. And then she said, did you just do... what you've been training your whole career to do. And I'm getting a little emotional, but it was, and sitting here with you, mm-hmm. that I got that idiot off the mountain
that
night.
Can you believe it? I can't believe you came and got
me. And his two kids that I'm hopefully going to meet sometime after school.
Yeah.
It that's what rescue's about, mm-hmm. is our combat mission is to put our ass on the line to save someone else's life. Mm-hmm. It's not taking life. Not that we don't have guns and we're trained, but our combat mission is to save lives. And like the PJ Creed, you know, these things we do that others may live. And it's God's mission. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah. I miss it.
It was the greatest rescue of all time, man.
You know,
it was a good one, dude.
I enjoy it, you know. And then two nights later, I said, I'm good. I'll watch the radios. Chalk 3 came in and Skinny went and got Murph and Danny.
That's another thing we don't have to talk about, man, getting everybody out of there.
We hadn't found Axe yet, so they went and got them, but they had to take off all their weapons, all their armor, air crew. They were bare minimum because the commander wouldn't let them be in a hover less than 60 seconds. And we had to pick both of them up and drop off water for the PJs.
Can you believe that? That's a wild story, them guys. Yeah,
it was an interesting, as he said, you know, even on that other podcast, it's a whole story in and of itself, just what it took. And we were just a small piece of that. Mm-hmm. You know, that big Navy
assets. We've been talking about this about 5 minutes. You got to understand, this is freaking last for days just to get, you know, this.
Yeah.
How intense that was.
As I said, it's crazy. It's, crazy. Right? It's full on crazy to see what they went through and him even being alive, let alone us finding him. But it was
I couldn't believe that
Gulab that saved his life. You know,
I hope your whole
got him.
That man loved him to death. Yeah, hey, that's a crazy story.
Yeah,
can't believe I was part of it.
Well,
we got him off the mountain.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I appreciate that. Make sure.
But it was all those training sorties that we do that when it was time, it worked.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't have written that. So every person we had to go in there, you actually had to do your deal. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't any way to get around it. They put us, it's almost everyone in a scenario that he couldn't get out of. They stripped that helicopter down, they put him in the middle of that canyon, you're going to turn around, complete mm-hmm. brownout. I mean, every option that you kind of go through, that's why you wrote the manual now.
So, yeah, it worked out.
So you what's your life been like since then?
I did two other deployments to Afghanistan. And quite frankly, there was crazy times on those. It's just...
I mean, it kept going.
Some knucklehead didn't write a book about it or make a movie about it, you know? But it was very rewarding. Hundreds of hours of combat time with multiple lives saved of all types of NATO forces, special forces, army guys getting blown up in Humvees and MRAPs. That golden hour, we even meshed in with Apaches on our wing so we could make dual rescues.
We didn't talk about that too, because the Apaches, they usually covered down on us when we would.
Yeah, Apaches are a formidable weapon system. But yeah, I did that, came home after my last deployment and became an operational test pilot and put cool widgets and gadgets in the helicopter, radios and touch screens and moving maps. And
that's cool.
And then retired in 2016 after 25 years.
Oh my gosh.
I'll tell you one thing that happened to us going through all of that is that we were allowed to say, hey, look, this is what works. Mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of pushed away what was nonsense and what wasn't. Yeah. Is that fair to say that?
Yeah.
I mean, we did that in our community too, man.
That's how it all started back with Desert Eagle back in the early 80s when it went really bad, when they were going to go in and get the Iran hostages.
Yeah.
And it was joint, but none of the jointness was talking at all, and everybody had different tactics and procedures. That's when SOCOM came together and said, if we're going to do things like this, we need to be on the same sheet of music. And they've been refining it over the decades. Yeah.
It's like up to each portion is so sharp, but then they also fit with the other ones. I mean, it's a package.
Yeah.
And it's every guy, when something presents itself, there's something to step in and deal with it. Like, you don't have to have somebody roll around trying to figure it out. We got somebody for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That definitely happened. For sure.
But I've stayed close to the community. I went and worked for a large defense contractor. I didn't really like the bigness of it. Mm-hmm. Working for a small defense contractor out of Ogden, Utah, by Hill Air Force Base. I work out of my house. And I'm doing the same thing that I did. I'm checked out to fly the helicopter. Not those kind of sorties, but maintenance, ferry flights, test flights.
We used to have a place in Eden, Utah.
Yeah, it's right down the canyon from Eden.
Ogden, yeah.
It's a beautiful area.
Oh, man.
I was just over the hill in Cache Valley where I grew up. So that's
Utah's
home.
So beautiful. I love that place.
That's home.
That's my favorite place. Beautiful area of the United States. I mean, Eden is one of my favorite towns. It's got the lake.
The reservoir there, Huntsville.
Name a dog after it.
Mm-hmm. He liked Huntsville because...
Well, what's funny is that area, it has Huntsville... Liberty. And there's another one where here in Texas, the same three towns are right next to each other. And in Utah.
So whoever that dude was made a trip, like, made a lap around the country, right?
Whoever named those towns, same with Texas, because it's that we have three of the same named towns.
There's obviously a popular Huntsville family because they're everywhere. Alexander, all that.
Yeah, I love that.
But I love it. You know, I miss it, as Marcus can tell. You know, you miss the camaraderie, you miss the mission, you miss the something bigger than whatever. It's just amazing. But I'm as close as I can working with GMRE is the name of the company, Gauss Management Research Engineering. We're a small company doing great things for the warfighter, and it's rewarding too.
That's awesome.
Different rewarding, but
yeah. I love it. That's so cool. Well, I'm very thankful of you, obviously, because of him. And
how did I forget when you flew in and landed at the Astrodome in Houston that time?
Yeah, I know.
When we saw each other again for the first time. There's
just
so many cool
stories. I was
cool
just showing my niece that picture. I was supposed to come into Minute Maid Park, but the Major League Baseball guys wouldn't let me land on the grass. So we landed in the street. And Marcus came out, I remember.
That was the first time.
So
I brought that helicopter. That was the cool thing about it. I brought 227.
That was the one, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, this was the stupid bird.
You know his bus class is 228,
right? Oh, it is?
Yeah.
We have a 228. I should have been flying that night. No, shouldn't have been.
Because that's an ass kicker, too.
Yeah. So that was our first public date.
It was our first date.
Oh, really?
It was that night.
Like you brought me back. You had met me, but I don't remember. I remember him.
Man, yeah. You were getting swamped that night.
I remember meeting all the people. It was that was a fun night. And Penny was there with us, too.
Yeah, so I was there. That was the first time Marcus introduced me as his girlfriend to people. And, that was June of 2010. And the Houston Chronicle did a newspaper article about you flying in and just about the whole story. And we have it framed at our family ranch, right when you walk in the entryway. Cool.
That was fun. That you know, mm-hmm. Penny was down there when we landed.
How are you doing with all this?
Good.
She hates when she says I talk too much, so.
No, you did great. No. You did great.
Okay, thanks, yeah. Man.
I just like to listen.
How are your boys with it? How old are they now?
They are 28, 25, 22, and 20, but they think their dad's a hero.
Yeah.
So they know he's a badass, right?
Yeah.
Because my kids, I think it's a kid thing. My kids think I'm not cool anymore. I'm definitely not tough. Yeah. And it's all this. So I was like, man, this fish. And I see that with my buddy's kids. I'm like, man, your dad's something.
They'll figure it out.
When you were on Joe Rogan, my boys thought that he, because you mentioned his name.
They said that was one of the high points of their life was that he gave a spanky shout out on Joe Rogan. They said, my life's complete.
I do it all the time.
We took the kids.
That's my favorite story.
To the little ones to Coronado a couple years ago. And we were staying at the Dell. We were right on the beach where the Buds students train. And we're walking down the beach and, you know, all the guys are in their uniforms and they're carrying the boats over their heads. And Axe and Addy are like, look at those guys. They just thought that was the coolest thing. And I said, you realize that's what dad did that on this exact same beach. And they were like, dad can't do that. They just did not understand.
I never really thought he flew helicopters either at the beginning of his career. It's like, no, he doesn't do that.
Yeah. Well, it's just so funny. Like when you're so, you know, so close to it, you don't appreciate it. Like Axe and Addy, one day they'll get it.
Sure.
When
you see us all together is the funniest thing. You never... Mm-hmm. And I've tried to say that once or twice. I'm like, y'all don't understand what we used to look like back in them days. Yeah. Like when we were dressed up doing the deal. And actually, dressing is one thing, but there's that mentality that goes with it. It's a completely different human being you're dealing with, right? And to go through it, and we all get around together, and you start telling stories, because a lot of you forget. I was like, how much of this stuff you forget? Most people have one of these episodes in their life to remember about, man. It's like a daily occurrence for us when we got into that. And that's the most... that we lived is one thing, but just to be together, to tell that, to share it, because of the lessons learned from it.
Unfortunately, we did lose a lot of buds.
Yeah.
I mean, on both sides, you know, a lot of my buds died in accidents and
most of my PJ buddies are doing dead.
That. Yeah. Is that
that's another thing about y'all to take the hit. No one knows that. Y'all get blasted hard.
But that comes with training as hard as we have to train in order to go and do those things when asked. So good times. I'm just glad you're alive. And I always like giving him a hard time telling him he freaking owes me.
Mm-hmm. I do, man. I do, brother. I mean, thanks for reminding me. You can remember as much as you want. I won't ever forget. I made sure I tattooed it right there.
I just love rubbing it in.
Oh, I got my green feet tattoo. Yeah, dude, I'll tell you what, the Marines get the green berets, everybody.
Marcus went this last June 28th to what camp was that?
I told you about that, where I went and saw the boys on the ground. They had their first ever from the Rangers, the Green Berets. Everybody who came in on the ground, they met up for the first time ever.
Really?
The Bifoot crew crew. In.
And talked about it.
So I didn't know that.
They had like a debrief. It just happened.
That's cool.
Yeah, of everybody, because there were Rangers and Green Berets.
It was in this huge hall.
And so the two came together, those two units came together and to talk about it.
Debrief the JPA guys, the guys. Man, we're all sitting in there. And just to hear the guys, because they got their asses kicked too, man, to get up in there.
Yeah. And Marcus went and surprised some of them knew that he was coming, surprised the others, and
that's when I ran into Captain America.
Yeah.
His kids in the same unit.
Yeah.
Hard charge. He's missing a leg now. He lost a damn leg after. Like a lot of guys went back. You went back, I went back. A lot of the guys kept going back. Bo's in a wheelchair now. He was in an accident. Mm-hmm. T.O.'s good. I talked to him. Mario's good. Reyes, a lot of them guys are.
Those were all ground, like
all ground, founders, man.
Yeah,
they're good. But
it took a lot of people.
Yeah,
a lot, you
yeah.
know.
It's so crazy how many people I'll meet, and they're like, "Oh,
I was in the middle of hell. I mean, like way down in there."
I actually talked to if you're listening, you lost your number. The guy that was at Camp Blessing that actually decoded the note or made sure that vetted out the note.
Yeah.
He got a hold of me a couple of years ago, and I cannot find that guy's number, but he's in DC and he would love to meet up at some point. We would love to meet up with him.
I'll tell you what too.
But it's so neat hearing everyone's perspective that was involved.
My handler kept the minute y'all dropped me off and I got back again, my handler kept a journal.
Mm-hmm.
And wrote down and gave it to her.
A team guy, yeah.
So we have that, and
yeah, he had a journal of like literally everything Marcus said. He wrote down, and then he wrote down like his perspective of what was going on, and wrote down the date, the time, and everything. And that was he came a couple years ago with his wife, and that was a really neat experience. It's so neat just getting to hear everybody's experience from it.
She's like, I read this in here. You told me this happened, but I didn't believe you. I was like,
well, it's not that I don't believe him. It's just it.
Well, what is it then? Because that's kind of what it sounds like. I'm like, I told you this is how it went down, man.
It's
I know
just
it sounds crazy.
Crazy
but it didn't
a lot happen. Of it is yeah. crazy.
It was crazy. That's the thing. Is it was.
Do you have anything like the note that the
yes, ma'am.
You have all
you
of
can't
that?
Believe what shows back up out here. I have my helmet back.
We don't have the note.
I do too. I have one of them. There's three. I wrote three of them.
Oh.
One of the guys got killed. One of them got wherever. I got my helmet back. I got that notebook showed up.
Do you have the man jammies?
No. I've asked.
I don't
for
know
them.
Where the hell those are, but the uniform made it back.
I have asked for
a shirt. I got my shirt.
Apparently, the doctor, whoever the doctor was at the base, I've heard he has. I don't know who it is.
I don't know the name, bro. But when they started passing me around, like yeah, I got.
I hear rumor of like who has it. I would love to have that one day. But the helmet we got in like 2012.
They called me back out. The admiral called me back up. He's like, got something for you.
Mm-hmm.
Come out here. No, I just flew. Didn't tell me anything else. That's usually terrifying. And I go in there and we're kind of sitting around. I go over to check in anyways, usually. And he's sitting there and he opens up his desk drawer and boom, slides my helmet across the table. Because he knew his mind was painted up like a Texas flag. And I was like, where'd you get that? Mm-hmm. And he goes, they found it in a cache down on the other side of the ridge in a mountain. I was like, did you shoot it off somebody's head? Ranger's got it. He's yeah. like, no, but they found the bunch of our radios and some of the rifles and stuff like that.
It was a ranger team that found it, and out of it being an extremely small world, my Pilates instructor, her brother-in-law was one of the guys on that.
It made yeah. it back?
Like, here in this little bitty town.
Yeah.
It's just such a small world.
This kind of stuff happens to me all the time. It's weird. No, yeah. that happened too. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah. It was, right, bro?
Good time.
I mean, there was we've even talked to the FBI guys that were involved with
it. Oh, keep in touch with everybody.
Yeah, I mean, we've...
It's
like every government agency that was involved, we've at least talked to one person from each agency that was involved. It's really incredible, and it was an incredible mission on many points, like yours coming in to the guys that were on the ground going through that storm. I mean, they had to walk through all of that, through the mountains, seeing their pictures from it. They've sent over their photos that they took like on their hike across the
we didn't look like soldiers, like you would think.
It looked like Vietnam guys.
Yeah, Vietnam
it
dudes.
It really did. The like how they just were torn up looking.
Headband kind of rifle band, you know, just beat to death.
When I first saw a photo of like the group of them, I was like, oh, this is from Vietnam. But it was the Green Berets that had walked across the
mountain. I mean, they were losing guys falling out trying to get through that terrain.
It was steep.
Humvees, they tried to do the Humvee thing. It was like,
And those locals are like mountain goats.
Oh.
They can
it's unbelievable.
Just do it. I mean,
yeah.
They walk up that mountain like we walk across flat ground.
In like tire tread flip flops.
Forgot the dude with the strings over the top of him, man. And you can move like they move like billy goats.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's amazing. That's probably where parkour came from because them suckers can move out.
Well, the guy that was in the movie Lone Survivor that's like running down the mountain, he is a professional parkour athlete, I guess you would call it.
Oh, the guy jumping on the rock.
Yeah. So in the movie, he looks like he knows parkour.
Uh huh.
They don't look like that.
Yeah.
They just look like they're just moving down.
Like running down. But he's a professional parkour guy.
We would be places where we would have to get dropped off by a helicopter and then kind of rope in and set up shop. And next thing you know, they'd just be standing over top of you, buddy, buddy. How you get, you know, I'm like, you can't hear them. It's the most, it's incredible. It's in your environment. Human condition, human body can move through anything, and they are fast. Great formidable fighters. I've never taken that away from them, ever. I mean, like, we talk smack and do all that. I'll do that all day long, right? But you never say, hey, they're not good fighters. That's what they do. I'll always give them that.
Well, thank you for coming on. We appreciate you. We're so glad that you're here. And Penny, it's so good to meet you. And
thank you.
I know our listeners will appreciate this story.
This is where we break open that other. I just didn't feel right telling it.
Yeah.
So now that it's out.
You need to tell it.
Yeah, you need to tell it.
You need to tell that story.
That's the only fair thing to do, right? So it's out now.
The what?
Yeah. No, we're saying thank you for telling that side of that story.
Yeah, it's a good.
And that's still not. You got. I mean, just every little thing. Because I would hear from the other pilots, people at the bases, like, man, the stuff that we had just to make things work. Because most everybody who knew about the op died, first of all. And then when the Angel went down, then you had to focus on that. And then you had the frequency hits in between, the damn storm. We're underrating that sucker, man, because there was houses floating down the deal.
The weather wasn't cooperating, but. He needed to get out that night, so we were going to get him out.
I did, damn it, and I got out.
Got out 5 years later.
Yeah, I woke up. Hey, I woke up 4th of July. 4th of July, woke up with my people. Mm-hmm. You can't get a better Independence Day than that.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you.
Yeah, brother.